Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mad Daddy on the Saturday flight from the Tower of Power, the very top story in my wavy gravy groovy gravy rocket laboratory, where we're bending every effort and making every test to be sure that our records are always the best. You see, before we play them on this crazy wavy air, we dip them in this smoking vat with extra special care. Wearing thick big rubber gloves and using special tongs, we make the Mad Dad acid test on the up-and-coming songs.
Well, not many songs per se. They'll certainly be music. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay. Here along with
Dave Bigley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're along with the amazing,
the one, the only, it's me,
CW.
Hurrah!
Huzzah, huzzah.
Absolutely.
The gang's all here except for Gar, who's getting ready for Horrible Horror. And I believe he's going live, or is it like
he's going
live
tonight. Yep.
He's going live.
So it still hasn't blown up yet. That's wonderful. And that'll be right after, or almost, well, actually a little bit before we're done. We got a little special long show tonight.
That's true, because we have
a whole lot of radio.
Stan Freeberg to celebrate. To celebrate his birthday, a whole lot of Stan Freeberg radio. That's right.
Yep. Get ready for some yucks, and yet maybe a little bit of suspense, eh?
Yeah, we do. Stan Freeberg will be in a suspense in his dramatic, his first dramatic role. Actually, I'm trying to think of another dramatic role he had, but I don't think it. But anyway, yeah, maybe his one and only dramatic role on Suspense, Alibi Me, as well as a program he did for the CBS Radio Workshop of something to the effect of a study in sarcasm or something, a satire. And,
yeah, same thing.
And the year before, or actually it may have been 2 years before he did his famous variety show, he did a sitcom last for 12, 16 weeks, something like that. And we have the pilot of that for this week as well. So all kinds of Stan Freeberg. And I think Dale's got a couple surprises for us as well.
Yep, I knew. It was a surprise to me, too, until today.
Yeah, and you know what? It's fun because, you know, Dale sent me a notice that he didn't realize that yet another soundbite. So many of these soundbites that a lot of the horror hosts, especially up in Cleveland, used, you know, the ow, 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 which was from Honey Earthers and things like that. Well, Dale discovered that when there was a rip sound, he said, rip my jeans, third pair today. It was really one of the first parodies of Elvis Presley at his Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah, but also by Stan Freeberg. So Stan was everywhere, very influential in radio, comedy, cartoons. We'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
So a fun packed night.
Fun.
And of course, he was associated with some of the great radio voices, too, working with Mel Blanc, Butler. June Foray,
yeah. So many of them.
Alan Reed, he worked with a lot of the greats.
Didn't he work Hans Gorin in something?
I'm sorry, the what?
Hans, I never can pronounce the guy's last name properly.
Hans Conrad?
Hans Gorin. Yeah,
Conrad, yeah. I'm sure he did, because Hans had such a good timing, comic and dramatic, that I can't imagine that he didn't work with Hans Conrad at some point in time, because just Stan loved talent, being surrounded by talent, as well as the talent that he had himself for writing, parodying, and he was a great mimic too. He in the mid 1950s, after Kay Kaiser had retired, they got the band back together and the original singers from Kay Kaiser's group, and they recorded songs in stereo. And they brought in Stan Freberg to do all the Kay Kaiser parts for the record. So whenever it came in, when Kay Kaiser would introduce who the singers were in that song, that was Stan Freberg throughout the record.
Yep. And again, with him putting out those records from various recordings, like the Honey Earthers and like the Elvis spoof Heartbreak Hotel.
And the Lawrence Welk one. Yeah.
I'm sure that's where Ron got his effects.
So much of that, yeah. And they also got it off of Bill Cosby Records and
The Family.
Wherever there was a good sound bite, it was there. And that's what made those shows so magical for us growing up, if we actually grew up.
Yeah. Where shall we start tonight with our radio treat?
Since we had so much suspense, let's hold that one back at least for the middle. I don't know whether you want to have the study or go with Stan Freberg's sitcom.
Let's go with the sitcom. Since it's an audition, let's audition Stan Freberg tonight.
We could do that. And as we carve up his birthday cake, we get extra piece because Stan won't be having any today. But But this is from November 21st of 1953.
The turkey vulture, the blue-winged warbler, and the tufted titmouse have moved from Texas to North Dakota. This proves the world is getting warmer. It also proves that birds are smarter than Texans.
Well, that's rich. Yes, That's Rich, starring Stan Freberg as Rich. We take you now to Hope Springs, California, that bustling little community just a stone's throw from the heart of Hollywood, to the home of Howard Crump, where Richard E. Wilt has been visiting. Howie's had a hard day selling real estate, and right now he'd like to catch a little shut-eye before dinner. So Howie slips into his den, stretches out on the hide-a-bed Davenport.
I knew it. Doorbell's ringing!
In his room, 11-year-old Happy Crump is very busy reading a 3D comic book.
Daddy, the doorbell's ringing!
In her room, 15-year-old Holly Crump is very busy painting her toenails purple. In her room, Hazel Crump is very busy getting supper.
Well,
what's she stewing about?
Daddy, good night.
Oh, never mind. Yes?
How do you do? I'm Miss Abbott, the secretary of the Bird Lovers League.
Who?
The Bird Lovers. Aren't you a bird lover?
I hate birds.
Oh, my. Well, isn't this the home of Richard E. Wilt?
No, it's not the home of Richard E. Wilt. It's the home of Howard S. Crump. Richard E. Wilt has been visiting here for 4 months. He's my wife's cousin. Second cousin. Once removed. And he's still here.
Oh, well, aren't you lucky? He's one of our most enthusiastic members, too. May I speak to him, please?
No, I'll see if he's come in. Is Cousin Richard home?
Happy, so Daddy, so is Cousin Richard home? Cousin Richard? No, why? Mom says Cousin
Apparently, he's not here.
Dear me, would you ask him to call Miss Ethel Abbott at the Bird Lovers League the moment he comes in? It's very urgent.
Urgent?
Bird business.
Bird business, is that so?
Yes, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Was that somebody for Cousin Richard, dear?
Yeah, some bird brain from the Bird Lovers League. Miss Abbott.
Oh, a girl bird lover.
Well, this one may be a bird lover, but she's no girl.
What was it about?
Bird business. It's urgent.
Then I think you ought to call Rich at work. Hollywood 95264, dear.
Thanks, dear. Bird lover boy.
Oh, Howie, you know you like him.
Yeah, I do like him. But how long is he going to keep nesting in my den?
Hello, Consolidated.
I'd like to speak to Richard E. Wilk, please.
Who was it you wished to speak to, please?
Richard E. Wilk. W-I-L-T, like in, will you go with me? I will.
Oh. Well, is that the first name or the last name?
The last name. The first name is Richard. R-I-C-H-A-R-D.
R-I-C-H-A-R-D. Oh, Richard.
Yeah, Richard E. Wilt.
Oh, Richard E. Wilt. We don't have a Richard E. Wilt.
I bet. Well, thanks a lot. Did you hear that, Hazel? They never even heard of your cousin Richard at Consolidated.
Howie, he works there.
Who says he works? How do you know he doesn't just chase after birds all day? And what's all this malarkey about that contest to name the stationery at Consolidated? Oh, it's you again.
Yes, I've changed my mind.
Oh?
I'm going to indulge myself.
You are?
I'm not going back to the office this afternoon at all. I'm going to watch seagulls.
Seagulls?
Mm-hmm. So will you ask Mr. Wilt to call me right after 9 a.m? It's so urgent. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Have fun.
Who was it, dear?
Oh, that bird dame again.
Well, anyway, Cousin Richard certainly made a hit with the bird lovers.
Oh, yeah, he's a big man with the birds. But they never heard of him where he worked. I tell you, Hayes, I'm going to ask Cousin Rich a few little questions.
Careful. Oh, Cousin Richard.
Hello, Richard.
It is not only the turkey vulture, the blue-winged warbler, and the tufted titmouse that have moved north. California's sardines have moved to Norway.
How's that?
How do you know so much, Cousin Richard?
Oh, don't mention it.
Well, Rich, the secretary of the Bird Lovers League, was here today.
Oh, Miss Abbott. Very fine bird man.
Well, anyhow, you're supposed to call her right after 9 tomorrow. She said it's urgent.
Oh, I hope it's no emergency.
Emergency?
Oh, you never know what's going to happen to birds in Los Angeles. Just the other day, a Western Roadrunner tried to cross the Hollywood Freeway at Sunset Boulevard.
Oh? What happened to it?
It ended up in the Hyperion Sewer Project.
Sit down, Rich. I want to have a little talk with you.
Oh, that's nice, Cousin Howie.
How do you like it at the Consolidated Paper Products Company, Rich?
Oh, it's very educational. Do you realize that they make everything out of paper? Money, milk bottles. Bathing suits?
Bathing suits?
Oh, sure.
Boys or girls?
Both.
What happens if somebody tears one?
Tears one? Well, who'd ground tearing bathing suits?
Yes.
Well, I wasn't going to tear any.
Well, I should hope not.
Good night. Just what do you do at this Consolidated Paper Products Company, Richard?
Well, when I first went there, I was a use-no-hooks man.
What?
I stamped use-no-hooks on cartons.
That sounds very important to me.
See, hooks are the natural enemies of paper cartons. Once a paper carton has been really hooked, it's never the same again.
See, Howie?
Then they promoted me to a this-and-up man.
Wasn't that nice? He got a promotion, Howie.
I stamped this-and-up on all cartons in which it is important to be able to tell the top, or head as we call it, from the bottom.
How can you tell the top from the bottom of a carton?
The top end is the end that reads this end up.
Well, yeah, but how can you tell a top end before it reads this end up?
Why, Cousin Howard, what difference does it make before?
Oh, good night. Look, are you still this end upping cartons?
I've been promoted again. Seems I never got this end up on the wrong end once even.
I thought you just said it didn't make any difference.
Well, Cousin Howard, once you've stamped one end with this end up, that end becomes the up end.
Yeah.
Well, how would a carton look with this end up stamped on its bottom?
Richard, did you say you've been promoted?
Oh, yes. I'm the missing man in the shipping department.
Huh?
Every time anything turns up missing, I get blamed for it. Right now, there's a whole carload of paper doilies addressed to Oskaloosa missing, vanished into thin air in the outskirts of Ashtabula.
Well, now, what about that contest you're in, Rich?
Oh, the contest to name the stationery. Yeah. Oh, it's a light blue, so I suggested Blue Heron Egg Blue. Not the blue of the blue heron, of course, but the blue of the blue heron's blue egg. Wouldn't that be a great name for a stationery? Blue Heron's Egg Blue?
Oh, great. That'll get you places.
We don't even put our names on our entries. Just a, you know, number. I'm number 217.
Well, look, 217. I tried to phone you at the Consolidated Paper Products Company today. Now, maybe you work there, but they never heard of you.
They... never heard of me?
That's what the telephone operator said.
She did?
Now look, Rich, you better stop fooling around with birds.
When it comes to birds, Cousin Howie, I don't fool around.
Well, you better do something to attract a little attention.
Attract attention? Me?
Yes, you might start with that telephone operator who never heard of you.
Now, what can I do to her to attract her attention?
Well, I don't know, Rich, but you better do something. They don't even know at Consolidated whether you're dead or alive.
Maybe they don't. I don't move very often.
Sort of a strange little comedy there with our man of the night, Stan Freberg.
Yeah, it's a little unique for him. Very deliberate type of how he's speaking on that tonight. So very, very unique for him.
Yep. And on Stan Freberg night, let's listen to one of his great commercials that that he used to play for a radio. Where are they?
Oh, yeah.
Scrolling.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure. Driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio?
We do.
That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
150 million.
Yeah, a couple.
Just a couple.
Yeah.
Now, that is so 50s sounding. I love that.
Yeah, he has Billy May does his arranging for so many years, and it always has almost like a Broadway musical sound to it.
Yeah.
Pieces like that.
There'll be more.
So, yeah, it's he was one of my very early influences for recordings. So Stan Freberg and Bob and Ray, Tom Lear. So, yeah, a lot of our comedy that we kind of honed in on came from things like that. And people
sorry,
like
guys,
that.
I blanked out there.
That's
welcome
okay.
Back.
I blank out
welcome
all the time.
Back. That's right.
But I have yep. an excuse, technology. Well, at least that's the excuse I'm using anyway.
Yep. Blame Blog Talk.
And
for
I
you.
Am, yeah. I am really enjoying this Stan Freberg very, very much, especially the absolute domino effect of all the people in the household telling somebody they need something from somebody else all the way back to him.
Yep.
Yeah, now sure in some future, in the, one of the other shows here, that we'll really get a chance to hear him more confident. I think he continued to gain more confidence as he went along. But he did, like you said, Dale, he did so much from writing to the radio, to voiceovers, to voices in cartoons. It worked for Warner Brothers and so many others as well.
Yep. We will get into more of that. But for now, let's wrap up this audition show. I believe it's called That's Rich.
That's Rich. Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back after the conclusion.
Well, next morning, Richard enters the office of the Consolidated Paper Products Company, firmly determined to prove that he's alive. He goes straight to the telephone operator.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Did you ever see me before?
Mm-mm, never.
Oh.
So what are you leading up to?
I work here.
Oh, excuse me. What's your name?
Richard E. Wilt.
Richard E. Oh, I just told somebody yesterday we didn't have a Richard E. Wilt.
I know. It's okay. Freckles.
Did you call me Freckles?
The first name that popped into my mind when I saw you sitting there plugging in and plugging out was Freckles.
Oh. What's your name?
I already told you. Richard E. Wilt.
Oh, I've got it firmly fixed in my mind. There isn't such a person.
There is. Richard E. Wilt. Richard E. Wilt. You better say it with me, Mom.
Richard
E.
Wilt.
Wilt. And once again. Richard
E.
Wilt.
Wilt.
Are you beginning to believe I'm alive?
Oh, yes, Richard. I couldn't forget you now if I tried. How do you spell your last name?
W-I-L-T. Like lettuce, see? Lettuce Wilt. When you see me, all you have to do is think of lettuce.
I'll always think of you every time I see a head of lettuce.
Thank you. Can I make a telephone call here?
Personal or business?
Well, it's to the Bird Lovers League.
Oh, a bird call. Well, a Consolidated doesn't believe in personal calls, but they don't have a rule about bird calls.
Oh, I see.
Maybe you better use the public pay booth down the hall.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I better check in at my desk for... Gosh, you've got a freckle right at the end of your nose. It just wiggled at me. Good morning, Mr. McCobb. Looks like a nice day.
What makes you think so?
Well, that's what the weatherman says.
Politics. It's all politics.
I see. Oh, did you see this memo?
No.
It says the surprise prize in the stationery contest will be awarded by our president this afternoon. Signed, F.O. Beasley. Gosh, there's going to be a surprise prize.
Yeah, probably a lifetime supply of paper cups.
Gosh, Mr. McCobb, have you got your indigestion again?
I will before the day's over. Look out, here comes Beasley.
Well, 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 Wilt. Congratulations.
Oh, gosh. Thank you, Mr. Beasley. What for?
You finally made it.
Made what, Mr. Beasley?
Made it to your desk. And only a minute and 35 seconds late.
Oh, don't mention it.
Just take your time, Wilt. We've got all day.
Thanks, Mr. Beasley. You know, Mr. McCobb, this is the first time Mr. Beasley ever paid any attention to me.
Politics. Where are you going, Rich?
Oh, gosh, I got to make a telephone call. Very urgent. Hi, Freckles. I got to make that telephone call. I sure hope nothing has gone wrong with some bird.
How could a bird go wrong?
Ooh, well, just last week, a crane flying over Los Angeles got its legs tangled in a television antenna.
Oh, how awful.
In the confusion, the poor crane laid an egg right in the middle of Arthur Godfrey and his friends.
Oh, my goodness, how surprising.
Apparently, the crane enjoyed the whole experience. And now, every time she feels like laying an egg, she picks out a television antenna and waits for Arthur Godfrey to come on. Fortunately, she never has to wait long. Well... Richard E. Wilt.
Oh, Mr. Wilt, I'm so glad we found you. Please call Mr. Hackett at Hollywood, 95264. He needs a bird expert right away. We recommend that you... Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye. Mr. Hackett?
This is not Mr. Hackett.
Where have I heard that voice before?
B.B. Hackett speaking.
Oh, this is Richard E. Wilt speaking.
Yes?
Yes. The Bird Lovers League said you wanted me to call you.
You're the bird expert.
Well,
could you drop in to see me, Mr. Wilt? I'm at the Consolidated Paper Products Company. Hello?
I'm still here. It sounded like you said you're at the Consolidated Paper Products Company.
Oh, yes, I work there. Could you drop in this morning?
I'm practically there.
Goodbye.
Bye. Freckles, does a B.B. Hackett work here?
Mr. B.B. is our president.
Miss B.B. is... Our...
Well, 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 Wilt. Back again. We've been lonesome for you.
Have you? I had to make a telephone call, which is
well,
why...
Nice of you to come back.
Oh, don't mention it. Paul...
I am not interested. I just want you to know that I've got my eye on you, Wilt.
Thanks, Mr. Beasley. Where's Mr. Hackett's office?
Right next to the telephone booth.
Down the hall, right next to... Yeah, I wouldn't have had to waste a dime calling him. Well, thanks, Freckles.
Come in.
I'm Richard E. Wilt.
Oh, Mr. Wilt, I won't take much of your time.
Oh, that's okay, Mr. Hackett. My time is... Your time.
Good. Now, briefly, we're having a little contest to name a new line of stationery. Our employees have made entries by numbers instead of names.
Yes, I know.
I don't even want to know who suggested what.
Oh, I know. See,
the only thing I'm interested in is this. Someone suggested Blue Heron Egg Blue as a name. Now, I don't know what kind of blue heron egg blue is. Do you?
Oh, sure. That's how I... Well, that's how I...
Good, that's fine. Now, here's... Tell me, what's that look like to you?
It looks like blue heron egg blue to me.
That's it. Blue heron egg blue. Now, what's your home address, Mr. Wilt? We'd like to send you a little token of our appreciation.
Oh, no, Mr. Haggard. You don't realize I work
Nonsense,
for...
Nonsense, my boy. No. Where do you live?
In Hope Springs, 1100 Heavenly Highway. That's at the dead end.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilt. I'm a busy man. I know you are, too.
Oh, sure. But, Mr. Haggard, see, I wanted to tell you
blue
about...
Blue heron egg blue. Oh, that's a great idea. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ooh, Richard, Mr. Beasley is looking for you.
He is? This sure is my day, isn't it, Frank? Oh, Mr. Beasley.
Wilt, I have had enough. Enough, you understand? Absolutely enough. You have been away from your desk all morning. I warned you, Wilt. I have had enough.
Mr. Beasley, I was talking to...
I don't care who you were talking to.
But you don't understand. I was talking to the...
I don't care if you were talking to the president of Consolidated. Just tell me this.
Yeah.
What is a carload of our best paper doilies doing in Walla Walla, Washington?
Walla Walla?
Yes.
Not Ashtabula?
No.
Walla Walla?
What have you got to say to that, Wilt?
Walla Walla? Not Ashtabula? Excuse me. I've got hiccups.
Richard Wilt, I have reached the end of my rope. You are fired.
I am? Fired?
Now get out! Get out! Get out!
Hi, Cousin Hazel. This is not me.
Why, Richard.
Well, Richard, did you follow my advice today?
Yes, I did, Cousin Howie.
Good. That'll get you places.
Oh, sure. It got me fired.
Fired?
Oh, Rich, what happened?
Well, I had to call the Bird Lovers League and...
Oh, good night. Didn't I tell you to let birds alone during office hours?
Yeah, but...
Somebody.
I'll answer it, dear.
Does number 217 live here?
Number 217. Oh, why, that's Rich. My goodness, what have you got?
A truckload of paper cups.
Cousin Richard, it's a truckload of paper cups for you.
That must be the prize for Blue Heron Egg Blue.
Oh, Rich, a truckload.
Yes, a lifetime supply.
Who would ever live so long? Hello?
Mr. Richard E. Will, please.
Oh, just a minute. It's for you, Rich.
Oh, me? Thank you. Hello?
Hello, Richard. This is Freckles.
Hello, Freckles. This is Richard.
I know. Mr. Beasley wants to speak to you.
He does. Ooh, what about?
He'll tell you. Don't hang up, Richard.
Hello, Mr. Will. This is F.O. Beasley.
Hello, Mr. Beasley. Richard E. Will.
Mr. Will, I think I may have been a little hasty today.
Oh, sure.
Could you get right back to work immediately?
Oh, sure, Mr. Beasley.
Well, thank you, and the sooner the better, Mr. Will.
Goodbye, Mr. Beasley.
Don't hang up, Richard. This is Freckles again.
Oh, Freckles. Where did you come from?
I've been here all the time. You better get back right away, Richard, or Mr. Beasley will get fired for firing the winner of the contest.
Gosh, I sure wouldn't want Mr. Beasley to get fired. Me too, Freckles. How do you spell my name?
L-E-T-T-U-C-E.
Getting warm. Bye, Freckles.
Bye, Richard.
Now what?
I'm hired again.
Well, what did I tell you? While you're alive, the thing to do is move, my boy, move.
Gosh, Cousin Howie, I'm going to use that for one of my mottos from now on. You sure are an inspiration to me. You and the birds.
In a moment, we'll return to That Rich. Over 1,700 American communities are participating in the annual voluntary collection for the Community Chests and United Funds. Give the United Way in your community. Now, back to That's Rich.
I'll get it.
Does Mr. Richard E. Wilt live here?
My goodness, what now?
A truckload of paper cups.
Oh, no. Cousin Richard, another lifetime supply of paper cups for you.
Oh, for me? Oh, are you sure?
For Mr. Richard E. Wilt, bird expert, from Mr. B.B. Hackett, with compliments.
Good night. Two lifetime supplies of paper cups. What's this one for?
Well, Cousin Howie, the other one was for suggesting blue heron egg blue. That was for the birds.
Yeah.
And this one is for suggesting that the suggestion I suggested was a good suggestion.
What are you going to do with two lifetimes?
Boy, am I going to live.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's our Rich.
This has been That's Rich, starring Stan Freberg as Richard E. Wilt, with Marvin Miller as Howard, Patricia Dunlap as Hazel, Bridget McCall and Tony Kaye as Holly and Happy Crump, Patty Chapman as Freckles, and Dawes Butler as Macabre. Also appearing in tonight's cast were Martha Wentworth, Bob Jellison, Will Wright, and Peter Leeds, with music by George Field. That's Rich, created and written by Frank and Doris Hursley, is a Homer Canfield production. Roy Rowan speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Now, our only question now is there going to be a moral?
No, not for a sitcom. Yeah. Not for a sitcom.
All right.
Somebody turn off that harmonica.
Oh, yeah. Stan was quite a voice character, and he worked, as we mentioned earlier, with Mel Blanc, June Foray, Dawes Butler. Here's a little bit of him working with Mel Blanc. I only found out today that Stan Freberg is one of my favorite Warner Brothers cartoon characters.
How many lumps do you want?
Oh, three or four.
Oh, dear, I gave you one too many. Well, we can fix that. There.
Oh, better give me a lot of lumps. A whole lot of lumps.
And then there's always...
Here we are. Tea's on.
But I don't want no tea. It gives me a headache.
Oh, what shall we have then?
Coffee.
There we go. We got one in there.
There you go.
I love Pete Puma. And that was, of course, Stan Freberg. Now, I don't know if you can shed any light on this, Dave, but was not that character a pastiche or precursor to Crazy Guggenheim?
I think it was a bit of a precursor to, yeah.
It seems like it would predate Crazy Guggenheim. Was more the 50s, where that cartoon was more of the 40s.
More of a 40s, right. So much work he did with Mel Blanc. They were teamed up together as... The Mice, Herbie and Bertie, the Goofy Gophers, Macintosh, Spike the Bulldog, and Chester the Terrier. That was Stan Freberg. Dumb Dog, and of course, as you mentioned, Pete Puma. You know what? That was it was kind of an impression of Frank Fontaine. That's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would have been who, what? He worked a lot with Jackie Gleason, I believe, didn't he? Frank Fontaine?
Yes, yes.
I believe. So.
And yeah, Stan Freberg would have went, you would think that, well, gosh, why didn't he keep going and continue to go? And he had that very popular 50s radio program. But as Dave pointed out on a show we did a long, long time ago, he refused to have a sponsor that either sold tobacco or alcohol of any kind.
Right. He wanted it to be one sponsor only, but it couldn't be tobacco or alcohol. And they had alcohol sponsor all lined up for him. He refused it. I think he did work for them with a special here and there on television in the 50s, but he did not want that to represent him.
Yep.
How was also for that time?
Go ahead, CW.
I was just saying how unusual for that time, because that was still an era where everybody was still smoking and cocktail hour was pretty much almost around the clock.
Uh-huh. Well, and even more surprising, the fact that he knocked off tobacco, because he technically took over for when Jack Benny left radio and was completely on television at that point. And he took over the spots that Jack Benny had. And, of course, Jack Benny at that point and for many years by then had been sponsored by Lucky Strike Cigarettes. And they, you know, Gunsmoke, L&M Cigarettes. They sponsored a lot of what was surviving on radio in the mid-50s.
Yep.
Exactly. So very unique stance on that. I admire him for that.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you know what,
sticking to his guns, yeah.
Yeah, and he also had a big problem with working on television, because if he thought censors interfered with his radio show, which they did, it was twice as bad on television. And that's essentially why he got into advertising, because you know what? Nobody gave a darn what Stan did in a commercial as long as it sold the product. It got attention and sold the product. And it did both of those things. It gave him so much more freedom to be creative than working in radio or television ever did.
Yep. And before we go on to our next feature, I guess we'll do a radio workshop next now.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Let's have a little more of commercial work from Stan Freberg.
How did it happen again? Well, I was driving down the freeway on my way to work watching this old Betty Grable movie.
Watching an old Betty Grable movie?
Yeah, on a little portable TV. I had it sitting up there in the dashboard.
I know,
but this commercial comes on. The guy in a white coat says, "Now watch this amazing demonstration."
And?
I watched. Next thing I knew, pow!
Look, you can't watch television commercials while you commute.
I found that out.
You can't read a newspaper?
No.
The only thing you could do while you're driving is listen to the radio.
Yeah, well, that's all I intend to do, boy, just as soon as I get out of traction.
Who listens to radio?
We do.
No matter if it's summer, winter, spring, or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people.
Too many.
And that was great Shirley Bassey there, and it makes you wonder how he could have got her to come sing that song of his for the ad.
Whoa, hit the brakes, stop the presses. Are we talking about Goldfinger?
Yes,
Shirley
exactly
Bassey?
Who it is. Yep.
That's the same Shirley Bassey. Yep. Yep.
Cool.
So we got a little CBS radio workshop, aptly named, I think, when you're talking about Stan Freberg, is an analysis of satire.
Absolutely. What's funny is right at the end of his first program, I think he got notice that the CBS radio workshop wanted him to come and present. He thought he was going to represent his incident at Los Feroces. But instead, this is what he did. And in this, you'll hear something that he recorded for Capitol Records and they never released. So he did it in this program. It's really cool. He and Dawes Butler did it.
Oh, great. You're going to hear some wonderful, recognizable voices from cartoons of our youth with analysis of satire from CBS Radio Workshop, originally broadcast.
It would be from August 31st of 1956.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
Well, from where we sit in this air-conditioned, glassed-in control room high above the floor on the Convention Coliseum, it would appear that Eustace J. Favoritson has the nomination all but sewed up. He's only 10 votes short of the needed 667, and New Mexico's 16 votes can put him over the top. The roll call is about to continue, so now back to Sam Pierce on the convention floor.
There's Sam Pierce once again. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the final moments of the 64 convention are really something. Well, Larry Thor is here on the floor with me. Larry, do you have a comment?
Yes, I do, Sam Pierce. It seems to me that the final moments of this 1964 convention are really something.
That's how I would have put it, Larry Thor. Chairman Cal Porter is pounding the gavel for silence now, and it's my guess New Mexico will throw her entire 16 votes for Eustace J.'s favorite son. Right, Larry Thor?
Right, Sam Pierce.
The convention will please be in order. Whereas in previous years, many delegates complained that they did not get to wave a sign in front of the cameras and thereby missed the opportunity of obscuring the television audience's view, this year, all delegates without signs to hold have been given balloons on long strings. This way, everybody gets to hold something. But this morning, two states got into a fight over civil rights, and Alabama broke an Oregon balloon with a lighted cigar. Now, balloon breaking is the kind of thing that can split our party. So let's have respect for the other fellow's balloons, at least in front of the television cameras. Now, New Mexico.
New Mexico, 16 votes.
Mr. Chairman, New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and the land of 10,000 lakes, proudly cast its 16 votes. In a moment, the result of those votes. But first, Mother and Dad, thinking of sending the kids to camp this year? Don't you do it. Bring the whole family to fabulous, colorful New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and land of 10,000 lakes. Say, you can bet your bottom dollar...
Mr. Chairman, I rise to a point of order.
May I remind the chair that under the unit rule, I have a full minute for my state commercial.
That is true, but your slogan is home of the pinto bean and land of enchantment, not land of 10,000 lakes.
Mr. Chairman.
The chair recognizes Minnesota.
Land of 10,000 lakes is Minnesota's slogan.
I know, but I like it.
All right, New Mexico, that will do.
No, if I can't have land of 10,000 lakes, I don't want home of the pinto bean.
Oh, well, then take home of the jumping frog. That hasn't been used.
Mr. Chairman!
Chair recognizes California.
Before the chair gives away jumping frogs, I would like to call attention to the fact that the original jumping frog, which Mark Twain immortalized, was an amphibian from Calaveras County, which is in California!
Order! Order! Order!
Mr. Chairman?
Order!
Mr. Chairman?
The chair recognizes the delegate from Missouri.
May I remind the delegate from California that the birthplace of Mark Twain was the little town of Hannibal on the banks of the Mississippi in the great and glorious state of Missouri.
Order! Missouri, sit down. New Mexico won't use your old frog.
I will if I want to. I got to where I like it now. New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and a jumping frog.
New Mexico? New Mexico, you can just hand me your balloon.
Sam Pierce again. The delegate from New Mexico is visibly shaken by the chairman's rebuke. He is relinquishing his balloon now. Well, this is a tense moment, ladies and gentlemen. Anything can happen now. Anything.
Mr. Chairman, are we here to squabble over slogans or nominate a candidate for the presidency of the United States of America?
First things first. Now, New Mexico, how about home of the Western Meadowlark? That has a nice sound.
Mr. Chairman, The Western Meadowlark is the state bird of Montana.
Well, you could share your bird with New Mexico. That's the American way.
I won't do it.
All right, then. Here, New Mexico, here's a dandy. New Mexico, overflowing with the milk of human kindness.
Point of order, point of order. Mr. Chairman, Wisconsin is America's dairyland.
Oh, sit down, Wisconsin.
Milk.
Sit down. Sit down. Now this convention will come to order, or I will take away all of your musketeer hats.
Hey, what'd you turn the set off for? That was Stan Freeberg kidding the political convention.
I don't care. He makes me mad. He doesn't take anything serious.
Yes, he does. That's satire.
Satire? What's satire?
In the next half hour, we will attempt to answer that question as CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, Colloquy 3, an analysis of satire. What is satire? How does it differ from wit, from humor, from criticism? Is it all of these or none of these? To help us answer this question, the CBS Radio Workshop is proud to present one of the most penetrating young satirists of our time, the Capitol Recording star, Stan Freeberg.
Thank you very much and good evening. Well, what is satire? That's a good question. Well, there are all kinds of satire. We opened the show tonight with a political satire, for example.
Yes,
and
it was an outrage to right-thinking Americans everywhere.
Well, just a minute. You can't come bursting in here.
Oh, yes, I can. I am the censor.
Oh, you mean the network censor?
Oh, no, 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 no. Censor with a capital C. I represent society.
With a capital S?
No, lowercase. I represent public opinion. There are some things too serious to be kidded, too sacred. Big business, labor, the farmer, the American way, mom, politics.
What's the matter with kidding politics?
You can't afford to offend one party or the other.
Oh, but that little exercise in rodomontade was not directed at any political party. I was only poking fun at the absurdity of all conventions.
Well, maybe. But you offended the states. The idea, having the delegates carry balloons.
Tell me something. Did you watch the conventions recently?
Of course, and very carefully, I can tell you.
Well, then, honestly, didn't they look a little like big rowdy kids? Sort of a ding-dong school with delegates?
That's a slanderous statement. I might even say a dangerous thought.
Oh, come on. All I suggested was this could be a convention of 1964 if they keep on at the rate they're going.
What do you hope to gain by such impertinence?
Gee, frankly, I don't know, but I can't help myself. A lot of things and a lot of people strike me as being funny, that's all. And by holding up a satirical mirror to them, maybe in a small way I can help them to laugh at themselves. And then everybody might be a little wiser. And even maybe a little happier.
Yes, but you went too far when you put mouseketeers' hats on the delegates. Now, that is defamation.
No, it's not. It's all in fun. Where's your sense of humor? Besides, our political conventions are nothing more than glorified Mickey Mouse cartoons anyway.
Watch your tongue. Watch your tongue.
That's not my tongue. That's Will Rogers' tongue.
Che, I don't believe it. Will Rogers was a great American. He wouldn't have said anything like that.
Well, gee, I'm sorry to argue with you, sir, but in September 1932, he did say it. Listen, this is what Will said.
Well, our national political conventions, if you have ever attended one or heard it over the radio, are nothing more than glorified Mickey Mouse cartoons and are solely for amusement purposes.
Unquote.
I just can't believe that 100% American like Will Rogers could have
gotten away with it.
Shocking. Simply shocking. Why, it verges on the seditious.
Look, if you don't mind, I'd like to get this show on the road.
All right, go right ahead. Please. But I warn you, I'll be making notes of everything you say.
Fine, be my guest.
May I borrow your pen?
Oh, certainly, here you are.
Oh, I hate ballpoints.
Aren't you afraid you'll offend the ballpoint people?
Don't you get smart with me, young man.
All right, sorry. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, what is satire? Well, it's a lot more than pointless fun-poking. Satire is criticism, first, last, and always. But criticism disguising itself in the bright robes of barbed wit. The jester may insult the king, so long as he does it with a laugh. So criticism, arm in arm with humor, glides confidently past the censor.
Well, you're not gliding past me, young man.
I know, I know. Satire is as old as man's pomposity. More than 2,000 years ago, Juvenal pierced the stuffed togas of ancient Rome with the same weapon Alexander Pope used to clip the powdered periwigs of 17th century London, or Ogden Nash to puncture the tinsel bubbles of Park Avenue's pretensions. But long before these viewers were alarmed, there was a playwright named Aristophanes, a Greek. He didn't think much of the works of another playwright named Aeschylus. In fact, he seems to have come to the conclusion that Aeschylus was one Greek who didn't have a word for it. At least Aristophanes wasn't bearing any gifts when in his great satire, The Frogs, he had this to say of Aeschylus.
I know him. I've seen him years ago, wooden-mouthed. No door, no bolt, no bridle to his tongue. A torrent of wild bombast. Intelligible? Not one line.
24 centuries later, a contemporary satirist felt the same way about rock and roll.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
All right, hold it, you guys. This is a rhythm and blues number. You gotta be careful or somebody liable to understand what you're singing about. You want that to happen?
No.
Well, then you gotta talk unintelligible like me, right, Stella?
You said it!
Okay. Now, you guys want to sell a few records?
Yeah.
Well, then stick some old rags in your mouth and take it again from the top, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I don't understand the words now. Real mumbly. Life could be a dream. Shaboom, if I could take you up with her, die your bubble. Shaboom, we do.
Intelligible? Not one line. But satire's weapon is the same, exaggeration. There was another top tune a while back that came marching out of my radio so often I began to think my set had been made in Texas by Texans. Remember? So the only place you could escape it was diving for abalone in the Straits of Juan de Fuca. So fearful of being snare drummed to death, I rushed to the studio and recorded this.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna slay. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her part of me. Oh, that's just a shade loud on the snare drum.
She's the sweetest little rosebud at Texas Avenue. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
Now you've covered up sparkle like the dew, one of the loveliest parts in the whole Texas.
Hey, what's the idea of turning it off?
I warned you, and you've gone too far.
Oh, please.
That is a direct insult to the Lone Star State, to say nothing of Southern womanhood and the memory of the boys in gray.
You think maybe I should have cleared it first with the state capitol at Austin, huh?
They would never have given you permission.
See what I mean? You see what we're coming to? It won't be long before you'll have to carry a license to laugh.
Exaggeration again?
You think so, huh? Listen, before I was allowed to laugh at Jack Webb, I had to get his written permission. And the only reason I ever got it is that Jack's shirt is not stuffed. He thought this was funny.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8.05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. Call me, Chief.
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
No, nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah, you were right.
I was right?
Yeah, it was a gun.
Do you really think you can get away with that?
Why not?
It makes fun of the police, and the police preserve law and order, and anyone who is against law and order is against America.
Oh, come on.
However, no good American would buy such a scurrilous record.
But more than a million of them already have. Maybe we better call them back. Oh.
Well, it's anti-British, too.
I'll bite why.
It lampoons St. George, the patron saint of England.
You don't leave me much to satirize.
That's not my problem. There's got to be a censor to keep you fellows in line. There always has been.
Maybe so, but he hasn't always been as tough as you are.
There's a couple of satire being used as Jonathan Swift. His tale, Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
Was satire on society at the time, that you could be a real big guy in one world and a nothing in another.
Absolutely.
Something came to mind when he was talking about Dragnet and how Jack Webb wasn't a stuffed shirt. What's funny is the whole reason that musical satirists doing parodies have to get permission from either the record label or the artist is because the record Columbia or Capitol Records was so afraid of being sued that they would not allow him to record something that wasn't approved as a song parody. But when he went to go to the Dragnet, he went to ask Jack Webb, and when Jack Webb saw him enter the studio, he said, "Freeburg, it's about damn time you got to me," is what he said on the studio as he saw Sam Freeburg enter.
That's great. That is tremendous. What a reaction.
That's wild.
Yep.
How
cool.
Dare
so, yeah.
You not parody me? What nerve? What gall?
Yeah, right. So, yeah. So much. And that's why, you know, there's a couple that to this day, they still have to do that. The Weird Al has to ask permission for people he parodies. And if they don't give it, like, you know, he already had one recorded, then there was a lot of confusion. So he never actually got to release it as an audio or a video. But I think he released it onto the web, but it really wasn't technically released as such, not as a single. And Prince, he always wanted to do Prince, but Prince would never, he never called it Prince. He called it the purple one, but would never agree to him doing it. Where Michael Jackson was really overwhelmingly welcoming him. He even let him use for Fat. He let him use the same set that he used for that movie.
I believe that about Prince because do you remember Uncle Vic?
Yes.
Okay, he did a lot of spoofs. A lot of his work ended up on Dr. Demento. He's a local DJ here in the Cleveland area back in the 80s. In any event, he did a spoof of Prince's Erotic City. He called it Erotic Suburbs. And he got a cease and desist from Warner Brothers. Which he promptly did. He wasn't fooling around with Prince's attorneys.
Right.
Yeah, there is a reason behind that. When Prince first started out, Warner Brothers kind of raked him over the coals. And then later on, when he got full control of all of his music, he held on to it with an iron fist. And I don't really blame him because musicians do have a wonderful history of getting cheated by the record corporations.
Yes.
So I kind of understand why he was so, if you will, to paraphrase Stan Freeberg, a stuffed purple shirt. But now, since he didn't leave a will, it's pretty much all go, I think. I mean, all of his stuff is all over the net now.
Yeah.
Well, that may end. I think they finally settled his estate not long ago.
It reminds me when you said iron fist. Reminds me of an old Goon Show line where the guy first ruled England with an iron fist, and then a glass foot, and eventually by a piece of string. But
That's rich. That's right.
Where's the harmonica?
You may not find us on your TV because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by, brought to you by, brought to you by RADI. Oh,
that applause, Stan. You deserve it. Eat it up. Eat it up.
Yes.
Absolutely. Have it with some of your marmaladio.
There you go. Let's wrap up. Analysis of satire. So far, I have recognized, of course, Stan, Dawes Butler. Alan Reed is in this. June Foray.
And Parley Bear.
And Parley Bear, yeah.
Who was all over radio, especially with Chester on radio and the mayor on the Andy Griffith Show.
Andy Griffith. Here we go with part two of CBS Radio Workshop.
Just this year, the world lost a great satirist who knew the bitterness which is the lot of a man in mid-century America who refuses to take things too seriously. You remember his acid sarcasm?
California is a great place to live if you're an orange.
The biting wit of Fred Allen was finally suffocated in a society where slapstick is king and where it is all right for a man to take a pratfall as long as he falls on his own prat. But nothing was sacred to Fred Allen, from network vice presidents to Mom herself.
For 20 years, my mother kept a light burning in the window for me. When I came home, my mother gave me a royal welcome and a gas bill for $729.
Can you guess who got sore at this little interchange?
Well, Mr. Cassidy, what is that ladder you have there?
I'm going over to Sweeney's for dinner.
And you have to carry a ladder?
The dining room table is too high. You can't sit on chairs. Everybody eats on a ladder.
Why is the dining room table so high?
Sweeney is a mounted cop. He always rides into dinner on his horse.
Oh?
Sweeney never uses a napkin. He wipes his hands on the back of his horse. There's so much food on the back of Sweeney's horse, he has mice under his saddle. Goodbye to you.
Well, who do you suppose beefed about that innocuous scene? The mounted police? The American Society of Ladder Manufacturers? Mice? No, the Irish. Or at least a small, militant, vociferous, and humorless group of Irishmen. So finally, Ajax Cassidy was written out of the show. It seems to me that today only two mediums remain where the satirist may operate with the widest latitude. Books and the theater. Elsewhere, there are restrictions of one kind or another. Even in phonograph records, which sometimes end up in locked vaults instead of music store shelves. Here's part of a satire which Dawes Butler and I wrote, but never recorded, and which you are about to hear for the first and last time.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, well, away, 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 gee whiz, it's a nice day.
That's right, Arthur.
Well, you look like you had a good night's sleep, lad.
That's right, Arthur.
It's a pretty tie you're wearing.
That's right, Arthur. That's right, Arthur.
Well, I just cleared my throat, is all. See, I was over to the Douglas factory the other day. They had a 1 cent sale. You buy one DC-3 for $100,000, you get the other one for a penny. I think you folks can still get in on that if you hurry right over.
That's right, Arthur.
Say, how about a tune from Frank? You want to sing Frank?
Yes, I do, and my name is Frank.
Well, it's Frank as far as I'm concerned.
Frank.
Say, guess who I had warming up in the audition pen this morning?
Who?
Morton Downey.
Call me Frank.
Okay, all those in the cast who want to see my new Honolulu movies, hold up your leg irons.
There isn't time, Arthur. The program's almost over.
Oh, what a shame. Well, I think I got time for one joke. You see this ukulele? I bought it with no strings attached. What's that? What's that noise?
It was me, Arthur. I was drinking a glass of noodle soup when you told that last joke. I wasn't able to laugh in time, so I did the next best thing. I gargled.
See, that's thinking on your feet. Only the quick thinkers stay with me. Hey, you with the freckles, you're fired. Ooh, that's me. I'm looking in the mirror.
That's right, Arthur.
We'll see you Monday, folks. If you want to have some fun over the weekend, get out and build your own airstrip. It's more fun than a barrel of monkeys.
Sing it, Arthur.
In the blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine. say.
All right, the censor's still with us, huh?
Oh, very much so. Oh, very funny, very funny.
I thought you'd be gone, but you liked it, huh?
Oh, indeed, I did.
No comment, no cuts, no blue pencil?
Well, no, not really. Now, of course, in all honesty, I must say, I think that last joke was a wee mite suspect.
Oh, what joke was that?
The one about the ukulele with no strings attached.
What's suspect about that?
Well, it does seem to infer that Hawaiians are not above indulging in sharp business practices, such as the sale of stringless ukuleles.
Oh, I see.
But then we must be lenient.
I hadn't.
After all, our ancestors in Connecticut were alleged to have sold wooden nutmegs from time to time. So we can afford to be lenient.
Lenient, huh? Mm. Well, that's a step in the right direction. Tell me, Mr. C.
Censor is the name.
Pardon me. Do you consider hi-fi enthusiasts sacred cows?
Hi-fi enthusiastic? I don't even know what they are.
Well, then I can speak freely.
Radio station WHIFIFM, serving the greater Milltown area, is once more proud to bring you at this time your weekly high-fidelity forum of the air, and here is your moderator, Feedback Frugal.
Yeah, thank you. Well, every week at this time, I have to ask all you people listening on anything less than a 15-inch speaker with an 8-inch tweeter to tune out, please. We don't mean to be undemocratic, but we're a select group, and we can't have just anybody listening. Thank you, so get out, please. Well, tonight our panel looks a little bit like who's who in hi-fi. To my right, Mr. H.H. Horn, president of the Summit Ridge Louder and Louder Club. Mr. Horn? Mr. Horn?
And to my right, Mr. Dacron Grillcloth, editor of Assemble It Yourself magazine.
Thank you, and good evening. And on my right, a very charming teenager, Miss Rhoda May Flug of the West Branch Falls branch of the Johann Sebastian Bach Fan Club. I believe that's the inscription on your windbreaker, Miss Flug.
I hope your ears are better than your eyes. It says, "Don't knock Bach." That's the slogan of our club.
Oh, that's the slogan.
We have jerseys, too, that say, "Every toccata is worth a fugue."
Fine. Thank you, Miss Flug, for the plug. Well, that's our panel. Now, first, we'll play just a teeny bit of a brand-new LP recording and see who'll be the first to identify it. Here we go.
I think you'll find it works better if you remove the record jacket first.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's my mistake. Here we go. Dirty jacket. Well, there we are. Now try and identify this. Well, that's about enough of that, I guess. Sorry. Well, my arm slipped. I'm sorry. Now, do you know who that was? H.H. Horn had his hand up.
Well, that was played over a Pimlington amplifier model 220.
Right so far.
With a Philips preamp and Magnus tone arm.
What do you mean a Philips preamp? That had over 1.6% hum. You can't get that kind of distortion out of a Philips.
My dear Miss Flug, I can hear up to 20,000 cycles.
All right. If great Miss Flug has got you there, H.H. It was a Murdoch Junior with over 2% hum. Now, what about the turntable, Mr. Grillcloth?
Yes, well, it has quite a bit of rumble in it. I think it was the new Murdoch just on the market.
Right you are. Do you think it'll sell 200,000?
No. They have quite a few bugs in them yet.
I got a Murdoch. It doesn't have any bugs.
What? Well, they've got a rumble like a cement mixer.
Well, sure they do if you don't use a foam rubber spindle adapter.
All right. Did anybody recognize the music?
Tell you the truth, I wasn't listening to the music.
Me either.
Well, no matter. Now we come to our contest. If you can guess the sound, you win a life-size, inflatable, latex rubber Liberace. He comes with his arms extended, ready to be blown up and set down at your own piano.
Hey.
Yeah, now what familiar sound is this? Listen. Well, I don't see any hands. That was Benny Goodman in a skin diver suit, 20 feet underwater, playing Danny Boy in a kelp bed.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think
you should have had that. Well, now one more just quickly here.
Recognize that sound?
I think that was a... No, I give up.
Yeah, what was that?
I was King Farouk in a skin diver suit, 20 feet underwater, applauding Benny Goodman.
Oh, well, if you'd played that on something beside a lousy Murdoch turntable without all that rumble,
What do you mean, lousy Murdoch? I'd like to hear your turntable.
All right, Miss Plug, you'll have an opportunity right now. Mr. Grillcloth has assembled his home hi-fi kit here in the studio, and we're all going to get a little listen, right, Doctor?
Yes. As advertised in our magazine, assemble it yourself. Now, of course, in order to prepare for our kit, you have to rip out all the walls in the interior of your house.
I see.
Next, our acoustical walls go up in sections.
Prefabricated.
More or less. One wall is solid tennis balls. The other asbestos. The third, wet bathing suits. And the fourth, a sort of a foam rubber bas-relief mural of the Pickens sisters in repose.
Some acoustics, right? What about equipment?
Well, I use 5 21-inch speakers in the ceiling, as you can see here. I have it all set up there. Plus a 10-foot horn enclosure in each corner. I have a Stylemaster preamp and a Fomroy turntable.
Oh, the waste one he could have picked.
Listen, madam, people who own Murdoch turntables should not...
All right, now, how much does all that equipment cost? I know our listeners will be anxious.
Yes, well, I'll tell you.
Find out the cost.
Yes, please, I'll tell you. $5,499.50 takes it home. Of course, the cost of building the railroad spur right to your house, which is essential, is not included.
Not included in the price. Well, could we hear a little music through your system? I see you have it all set up.
No. I'm afraid it wasn't designed for this studio.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, the room won't stand the stress.
Oh, I think it would, but I'm sure our listeners would have enjoyed hearing it.
Sure, I would have enjoyed hearing it.
No, not me. This way I don't have to hear that more than 5% turntable rumble in that lousy farm, Roy.
Just a minute here, Mrs. Smart Alec.
Yeah, you
all
just
right,
panel.
Here, Miss Plug, put your windbreaker back on, please.
All right, you want to hear a little hi-fi, eh? Well, listen to this.
Concludes our weekly High Fidelity Forum of the Air. Now back to the frothy beat of Claude Hopper and his boys.
There's still hope for laughter in America, for there are still satirists in America. We're a hardy species as difficult to extinguish as liberty itself. Our names are familiar and our lust for laughter cannot be discouraged. You may think of us as cartoonists, writers, comics, perhaps, but we are all fundamentally satirists, from Chaucer to James Thurber, from Molière to S.J. Perelman, from George Bernard Shaw to Dorothy Parker, Al Capp, Voltaire, Sid Caesar, Groucho Marx, Bob and Ray, Walt Kelly's Pogo, and Jonathan Swift's Lilliput. The list would outrun the time we have left, but all of us all have this in common. In seeking to blow away mankind's absurdities on a gust of ridicule, we hope to make mankind's burden a little easier to bear. Before you reach for that blue pencil, stop and think. Can you imagine life without a laugh?
You have just heard the CBS Radio Workshop production of Colloquy 3, an analysis of satire, starring the Capitol recording artist Stan Freeberg and produced and directed in Hollywood by William N. Robeson. Colloquy 3 was written by Mr. Freeberg and Mr. Robeson, with music by Lynn Murray. Included in the cast were June Foray, Dawes Butler, Sam Pierce, Larry Thor, Parley Bear, Alan Reed, and Bill Thompson. Next week from New York, the workshop will present the radio premiere of The Hither and Thither of Danny Dither, a modern morality play in which a very young angel upsets a celestial efficiency expert's efforts to streamline heaven. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed over most of these same stations by My Son Jeep. And don't forget, CBS, caution before speed. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Interesting look at expressing humor to kind of say something maybe on a social or other level.
Yeah.
Still very timely. Still very timely.
Yeah.
Still timely, yeah. Yeah. What's that, 55 years ago or so, and still is timely. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, something. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, early,
cops are after Dave, by the way, folks.
Oh, no, that's not me this time. Must be CW. The Stan Freberg, when he was a youngster, used to fake being sick so he could stay at home and listen to Vic and Sade on the radio. You know, this is he found these things so, and I find that so dry, but a lot of people really enjoyed it, and they lasted a lot of years. So I'm the one that's wrong in that, but the fact is, you know, that is one of the things that helped, you know, to help tone in Stan's sense of humor and such. It just, we're all byproducts of those things of which we listened to and studied and such. And
yep.
That was one of his influences.
Yes, and Stan Freberg and all those great voices. That was very much like a Pride of Carrots. Almost all the entire same cast.
Yeah. Now, I got to thinking the last cartoon that Stan did voiceover for was the only animated episode of Amazing Stories about the dog, and Stan was the father in that episode. So if you watched all the episodes of Amazing Stories, which I'm pretty sure I did, Steven Spielberg's show, they say that show ate up all the Cosby money. That's how much it cost them to put that show on. But yeah, that was maybe the last time Stan did a cartoon voice was for Steven Spielberg in Amazing Stories.
Ah, well, it does say he voiced Cage E. Coyote, the father of Wile E. Coyote, in a 2000 short of Little Go Beat.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Good.
That's what Wiki is saying. Anyway.
No, that's fine.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Great. I think that's great. I think that's great. I did not realize he had done anything after that. So, although he did, you know, he also took time of hosting When Radio Was, which would presented other old radio programs, and he hosted that for a couple, 3 years or so. Was a nationally syndicated series. I think it's still out there. The guy who did all of the radio versions of hour-long versions of the half-hour Twilight Zones. He's the guy that was producer of that, Carl Amari.
Ah. Freberg also got involved with a few films. He was cast to sing the part of the Jabberwock in the song Beware the Jabberwock for Disney's Alice in Wonderland with the Rhythm Heirs and Dawes Butler. Yep. It was a
musical
rendering of the poem Jabberwocky from Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. Not included in the final film, but a demo recording was included in the 2004 and 2010 DVD releases. Ooh. Have to check that out.
Wow.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, George Lucas called upon Stan Freberg and not Mel Blanc to audition for the voice of C-3PO in the 1977 film Star Wars.
Really?
Whoa!
It was Freberg who suggested that Lucas use mime actor Anthony Daniels' voice.
No way!
Huh. Yep. Tis true. Tis true.
Wow.
Amazing how cyclic all this stuff.
six degrees of separation from Stan Freberg we're doing here.
Yeah, he was in, he was also in the movie, oh God, well, like everybody in the world was. It's a mad world.
Yes.
He appeared in a non-speaking role as the deputy sheriff did as the voice of a dispatcher in it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who wasn't in that? I mean, I'm telling you.
Wow.
Yeah, true. Even what was left of the Stooges was in that.
Yeah, and Buster Keaton. So, yeah, so many of them were just a one bit walk. Like the Three Stooges didn't say a word. They just stood there with fire equipment at the airport, and Jack Benny rode up in his Maxwell to offer them a ride, and they turned him down. Okay, so you know, and Rochester was in that. Rochester was one of the feature characters in that. So. Eddie
awesome.
Rochester Anderson.
Got a lot of radio.
Yeah.
A lot of Stan Freeberg. A
lot of radio.
As this next episode, we saved the best for last. Here's Suspense. And a great title on this one, Alibi Me.
Yeah, this is his serious acting debut, I guess you would probably say. And
we're serious.
I thought he did a good job with it. Now you guys will get to listen and tell me what you think.
Here's part one of Alibi Me from Suspense, originally broadcast way back.
Episode number 747, and this is from April 20th of 1958.
Suspense.
Killing.
And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
One of the most unpredictable things about this business of entertainment is talent. We have seen singers become actors. Example, Frank Sinatra. And actors become singers. Example, Jeff Chandler. Steve Allen composes music. Ernie Kovacs writes a novel. Jackie Gleason conducts an orchestra. And now we present the latest talent turnabout, Stan Freberg, satirist, whom you are about to hear in a new identity, Stan Freberg, actor. Listen, listen then as Mr. Freberg stars in Alibi Me, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe?
Huh?
Come on, Joe, get up. It's 2 o'clock.
What do you want?
Joe, you got to get off that couch and fix up the yard.
Oh,
Joe!
Saturday, let me sleep.
No, we've got to keep the place in good shape. Now rise and shine.
Oh, come on, Daphne. I'll do it tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Always tomorrow. You can't keep putting things off.
I don't. Who was it bought the savings bond to take care of our future?
Who suggested the idea?
Well, who read the story in the paper that told about bonds being a good investment because they pay off $4 for every $3?
And who pointed out the article for you to read?
Well...
Right. And now I'm pointing out the yard to you. Our bonds are guaranteed by the government. Our grass isn't. Mow.
That proves it.
What?
A little knowledge in the hands of the wrong person can be dangerous.
What does that mean?
You know one plain, simple fact. Bonds are a good investment. Now, you not only use it to get me to buy a bond a month on the payroll savings plan, but you'll probably use it against me the rest of my life.
If it gets you to mow the yard, I will. Move out, boy.
I'm going. But understand this. My next wife is going to show more respect for my hard work.
So would I if I ever saw any. Bye.
Murder.
And now, Alibi Me, starring Stan Freberg. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This time it's a showdown. I've took all I'm going to take from Julie. It's tough enough to hustle a buck even without interference from him. This time it's a showdown. For real. Julie, I want to talk to you.
But look at you. No manners. No knock on the door. No could I come in. No good afternoon. No manners. No class. Always on the muscle.
I want to talk to you.
A little more relaxative with a voice. This ain't no candy store in Brownsville.
Now listen, Julie.
Didn't you hear what I said? Keep it quiet. Keep it class.
I want to know what's the big idea, you hear me? I just come from Pitkin Avenue. There ain't a candy store. There ain't a pool room. There ain't a bar that'll handle my punch boards anymore. Not one. We now take from Julie, they said.
They said correct.
But that's my territory. I build up the punchboard business there.
I know. I watched. You hustled good. You built it up real nice for me, and I appreciate it. I already sent you the biggest lollipop in town. The biggest lollipop in town for the town's biggest sucker.
Julie, I'm warning you.
You're warning me what? What'll you do? Give me a double whammy, like in the funnies? Ever since we was kids, you hate me, I hate you, and it's like a kind of mutual life insurance.
That punchboard business is mine. I need it. I need that dough.
You need dough? I'll tell you what. Here's a half a buck. Run down, get me a corned beef sandwich, and keep the change. Here, catch.
Julie, I told you I...
Look at the face on him. If looks could kill, huh, kid?
I'm not kidding, Julie.
Now put that phone down, Georgie.
No.
Put it down, kid. Now remember Larkin. 6 o'clock, I got to report to Larkin on my parole. They're going to know you done it. Georgie, Larkin is going to know it. Georgie!
That does it. No pulse. Nothing. Not a flutter. Just one stinker less in the world. I looked down at Julie and I remember standing next to him in Larkin's office in a precinct station house years ago. And Larkin saying,
if one of you punks is ever knocked off, my first suspect will be the other. I better have a good alibi, whichever one of you does it. Because I'm warning you now, once I get you down to headquarters, you're a hot seater.
I need an alibi. A good alibi. How much time do I have to set one up? Let's see, 4:10. And at 6, Julie's supposed to report to Larkin. Till 6. Okay, that's 1 hour and 50 minutes. For an alibi, I need people. Who will alibi me? Who? Leo, the bartender down at the Shamrock. He's the one. He'll alibi me. Good old Leo.
Georgie! Oh, Georgie, Lord love you, boy. You're a sight for sore eyes. Hey, what do you have, huh? Just name it, it's on the house.
Scotch. Scotch.
Sure.
Leo,
yeah, boy.
We've known each other a long time, yes?
I hate to think of the years that's passed since we met. I'm getting old, Georgie, old.
Not too old to remember a couple of favors I done for you.
Georgie, boy, not if I was to live to be 100. Hey, here, drink hearty, huh?
Thanks. Look, I want you to do a little something for me.
Oh, well, look, kid, I'm a little short right now.
No, it ain't money. It's just, well, in case you should be asked, I've been sitting here since 3:30, huh?
Yeah? Why?
What's the difference, why?
Anybody special you want me to say it to?
You gonna do it or no?
Well, look, Georgie, I got a right to know what I'm getting into. You want me for an alibi? I want to know why.
Well, let's not make a production out of it. Chances are you won't be asked. But if you are, I've been here since 3:30. You know what I mean? Okay?
Would Lieutenant Larkin maybe be one of the ones who might ask?
Could be.
Look, Georgie, you want money? I'll find you money. I don't know where, but I'll find it. You want food? I'll feed you. You want clothes? Just say the word, huh? But if Larkin is looking for you... I ain't alibiing you.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Memo on medals. Interesting information about our military awards and decorations. Campaign medals were authorized by Congress in 1905. For all officers and men engaged in specified wars and military action, including such widely divergent battles as the Civil War in the United States and the Boxer Rebellion in China. The Navy and Marine Corps have a special Manila Bay Medal for members of the United States Asiatic Squadron under command of Commodore George Dewey in May of 1898. The Haitian campaign of 1915 is commemorated with a medal, as is the Santo Domingo expedition,
which suppressed a revolt in that country and preserved order during elections in 1916. The Army has its Mexican Service Medal for those involved in any of several expeditions or engagements from April 12, 1911 through June 16, 1919. There is also the Army of Cuban Pacification Medal for United States troops who, from October of 1906 to April of 1909, helped establish a stable government in that island nation. The Victory Medal was initially awarded to all United States service personnel in World War I expeditionary forces, including, for the first time, women serving in the military units. There is a story behind every American medal, a proud story of devotion to country and unselfish service to keep it strong and free.
And now, starring Stan Freberg, Act Two of Alibi Me.
It's 25 past four. You got only 95 minutes left till 6 o'clock. When Julie don't show, Larkin goes looking. First for Julie, then for you. You gotta be ready for Larkin when he finds you, and you gotta have a pretty sensational alibi. You won't settle for less. Not him. Think, Georgie. Think who you know. Who are your friends? Georgie, think. Who? You see? It works. A second thought and it comes to you. Joni, that's who. Good old Joni. She'll be your alibi. Now, she's crazy about you. Always has been. Ever since that day up at Bear Mountain. Oh, let her be in. Please let her be in. I'll never ask nothing again. Just let her.
Well, look what the cat dragged.
Hello, Joni, baby.
I shouldn't talk to you, Georgie. I really shouldn't. It's more than 2 months.
You want to know why? You began to mean too much to me, kid. So stay away from her, I says to myself. Just don't ever see her. She'll wear off, you know what I mean? But I was wrong, Joni. You mean more to me now than ever. I couldn't hold out no longer. That's why I'm here.
Oh, Georgie, baby, don't ever stay away again. No matter what the reason, don't ever stay away from me.
I'm back for good.
Oh, it's been terrible without you. All the time singing the blues, not feeling like going out or seeing anybody.
Well, that's all over now. You know what? We're going to celebrate. Tonight, we're going out into town. Dinner, a show, dancing afterward. Crazy, huh?
I got a new number I've been dying to wear.
Good. By the way, sugar, anybody been here today?
No, not a soul. I was all alone, feeling just awful until you came.
Joni, look, in case anybody asks you, not that anybody's likely to, but in case they should, you know what I mean, do me a favor. Will you tell them I was here with you all day?
I'll tell the world you were here with me. I'll shout it from the rooftops. I don't care who hears it. I love you, Georgie. I just love you.
Yeah, me too. But look, Joni, in case anybody wants you to be definite, will you say I was here since 3:30, and stick to it, no matter what? 3:30?
I'll say I was with... Wait a second. What are you trying to pull?
Relax, Joni, relax.
No, Georgie.
What's the matter, kid?
What's the matter? Plenty's the matter. You dirty, no good, miserable son
Joni,
of a...
Joni, now listen to me.
I'm beginning to get it. Trying to sucker me to give yourself an alibi.
Joni, stop yelling. Listen to me. What I said is true. I need you.
Sure you do. So I'll say you were here with me since 3:30. You'll get no alibi from me, Mr. Wise Guy. Now pick yourself up out of that chair and get out of here.
I guess nobody's going to stick up for this guy, huh?
I'll stick up for you, Stan.
That's right. We'll be your fall guy.
It's your birthday. We'll all stick up for you on your birthday.
That's right. He would have been 90, what, 7? No, 93.
I'm not a numbers guy. I'll go with what you say.
He was born in 19 and 29, so...
19 and 29, okay.
93. Passed what? In 2015, I believe.
Yeah.
Right.
Something like that.
So, yeah, this is different hearing him in a straight role, a dramatic role.
He's not doing too bad with it, but then, you know, we haven't been surprised. We've heard Bob Hope in a dramatic role. We've heard Fibbergy and Molly in a dramatic role. One we haven't heard yet, which I really can't wait to get to, is I got Milton Berle doing a dramatic role. So, you know,
we've even had Jack Benny.
Look forward to sharing that one.
Jack Benny,
yeah.
CW.
And, yep. Nothing like those dramatic roles.
No. Well, we might as well wrap up our presentation from
Suspense.
Yeah,
we'll still have a couple minutes left over. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got more fun things to throw in there. You know, for example...
Too bad about radio.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, since television, you know, hardly anybody listens to radio anymore.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that if I were you. There's a radio in use for every man, woman, and teenager in America.
Really? Gee, I'd hate to think of them all turning them on at once.
They do. Every morning.
Who listens to radio?
Let's
go where you go, medium called radio. That's with you every night. Long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama radio. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring, or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people.
One of those a little bit different, but used throughout radio programming. Let's wrap up. Suspense.
Yep.
Alibi Me. Stand free.
How do you like that? You do things to people all your life, and when you want something from them, an alibi, for instance, what do you get? Nothing. That Leo, that Joni, I'll fix them when they get out of this. How do I get out? Only an hour and 5 minutes left before Julie's due to see Lieutenant Larkin, and he ain't gonna make the meet. Only 65 minutes. Who is there to give you an airtight, ironclad, cement foundation alibi? Think hard, baby. Who's around town? Who's left? Timmy. Dope, you should have thought of him first. Timmy, laying there in the hospital, of course. Good old Timmy.
Good to see you.
Hi, Timmy. You're looking 100%. Sorry, I didn't have time to bring candy or flowers, you know what I mean? How you doing?
Oh, not bad. At least I'm alive. Doctor said it was a miracle. How's things with you?
Tim, I'm leveling with you. I come up by the back stairs. I didn't want no one to see me.
Oh, yeah? In a spot, Georgie?
I need an alibi for this afternoon. Since 3:30.
Oh, you got it. In this private room. Nobody comes near it. Nurses, orderlies, I don't come unless I give out a yell. And I can have visitors any time I like. No one was here all day.
Gee, Timmy, I'll never forget you for this.
You know, you got one of the oldest alibis in the world. You were sitting up with a sick friend.
Yeah.
Anybody doubts it, you send them to me.
Shows you. You never know who your friends are till you're in a jam.
I'll have a nurse come in so she can see it. And then you take the elevator down and ask some dumb questions so the operator will remember you.
Boy, you don't miss a trick, do you? Thanks again, Tim.
Yeah. I'll ring for her now. Judge.
What is it?
My ticket.
Tim, what is it? You want a drink of water? Timmy! Timmy! Tim! Don't die now! Tim, answer me! Say something, please!
is dead. My alibi is dead.
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe, honey.
Uh-huh.
Joe, darling, put down the paper. I've got something important to ask you.
Okay.
Joe.
All right, what?
How many savings bonds do we have?
What kind of a question is that?
A good one. How many?
I'm not sure. I'd have to count. And I'm reading the paper. Now, what do you want to know for?
Have we got enough to make things comfortable for us?
Very comfortable. That's why I buy on a payroll savings plan. A bond a month will give us quite a nest egg for the future.
Enough for a college education?
Eventually. But who's going to college?
Our children, silly.
We don't have any yet.
Oh?
What do you mean, oh?
Better buy some more bonds, honey.
Daphne, you mean...
We've got a new investment.
How about that?
And now, starring Stan Freberg, Act 3 of Alibi Me.
I'm sunk. It's 5:06 and I'm sunk. In 10 minutes, maybe, Lark will be looking for me and I got no alibi. So I've come home. So I'm walking up the stairs. And I hear a sound. My landlady, Mrs. Ettinger, is nailing down linoleum in the hallway. Good old Mrs. Ettinger.
Oh, hello, Georgie. You just come in?
Yeah, but if anybody's to ask you, Mrs. Ettinger, especially Larkin, you tell him I've been in all afternoon. Understand?
Larkin? Lieutenant Larkin?
Yeah.
Well, I can't do that, Georgie. I won't lie to that cop.
Oh, yes, you will. You'll tell Larkin I'm in my room all day.
No, I won't.
Mrs. Ettinger, you don't tell Larkin I'm in all day? I tell him about Charlotte.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't, Mrs. Ettinger?
Please, Georgie, I don't want no trouble.
Listen, you'll be in plenty of trouble if Larkin hears about your daughter lifting a fur jacket right out of a department store.
I made Charlotte give it back. I marched her into the store myself. We give it back to the manager.
Sure you did. But a crime's a crime, whether a store prosecutes or not.
Oh, Georgie, please, she's only 15. She's a good kid. Her life would be ruined. You wouldn't tell me.
Now, Mrs. Ettinger, what's there to cry about? I'll keep my mouth shut just like you want. And you'll open your mouth just like I want, and everything will be fine. If Larkin asks you, I wasn't out of my room all afternoon. Okay?
You won't tell him about Charlotte?
It's up to you, Mrs. Ettinger.
All right, Georgie. All right. I'll say you was in all day.
And there's my alibi. Safe, sealed, and delivered. The best alibi in the world. 6:15. It won't be long now. I gotta watch myself when Larkin's here. Just the right attitude. Not too anxious. Not too casual. Just right. Yeah? Who is it?
Open up, Georgie. It's me, Larkin.
Lieutenant Larkin? Well, well, well. What a surprise. And to what do I owe this great pleasure?
Remember I once told you, Georgie, if anything happened to Julie or to you, my first pickup would be the other one?
I remember. So what? You mean Julie is...
He's been made dead.
No kidding. Well, what do you know? And you've come to offer me your shoulder to cry on.
You're not surprised.
I'm not the only guy who hated Julie, you know. Tell you what, let me know who did it. When you find out, I'll contribute a sawbuck to his defense.
Save your money, Georgie. You might need it.
Yeah? How come?
Remember I told you at the same time you'd better have a good alibi? Because once I got you down to headquarters, I'd prove you did it.
The words strike a bell.
Give, Georgie. Where were you today?
I was nowhere.
That's a fact.
That's a fact. I was right in here all afternoon.
Can you prove it?
Well, it ain't easy to prove you were somewheres alone all day.
Can you prove you were here?
Well, I didn't see anybody except... Oh, yeah. Mrs. Ettinger, my landlady.
Yeah? All right. Let's hear her version.
All right. Mrs. Ettinger? Mrs. Ettinger?
What is it?
Come in here a minute, will you?
Oh, now what? It's always something. What do you want, Georgie?
This is Lieutenant Larkin. He...
I won't keep you long, Mrs. Ettinger. Just a couple of questions. Were you in all day?
The whole day.
Was Georgie in all day?
Yeah, sure, he was in.
You're positive?
I'm positive.
What makes you so positive?
What makes me so positive? I cleaned his room, that's what makes me so positive. And I pressed a suit for him later, that's what makes me so positive. And when I was sweeping the hall, his door was open and I saw him. How positive can you get?
You're prepared to swear to that in a court of law?
Go ahead, Mrs. Ettinger. Swear. Swear by your daughter's head.
I swear.
All right. Thank you. You can go.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
That's it then, Georgie.
Meaning?
Meaning your alibi stinks as far as I'm personally concerned. But for the record, it lets you off the hook.
You hate that, don't you? You'd like to hang the big one on me, wouldn't you? Yeah, who is it?
Lightning Delivery Service got a package for George Lennox.
Come in. Who is it from?
Mr. Moore. Mr. Julie Moore.
Julie.
Open it, Georgie. Go on. Go on, open it. I want to see what Julie sent you.
Well, okay. That's only a lollipop.
I never seen such a big one.
All right, who asked your opinion? Beat it. Go on, get out of here. What are you waiting for?
What do you think he's waiting for, Georgie? Stake the kid.
Stake him? What am I, the mint? You stake him.
Okay, cheapskate, okay. Keep your lousy tip. Fine thing. I'm here twice this morning and three times this afternoon,
shut
and
up.
You're not in.
Shut
five
up.
Times up and down them stairs and not even a nickel.
Will you shut up?
Here you are, kid. Here's your tip.
Hey, thanks, Mac. A whole buck. Hey, thanks.
Don't mention it, kid. You earned it.
Oh, thanks. Hey, I almost forgot. There's a message goes with the lollipop. To the biggest sucker in town from Julie. That's all there is to the message.
It's enough. Get your hat and coat, Georgie.
Suspense. In which Mr. Stan Freeberg starred in William N. Robeson's production of Alibi Me by Third Jeffrey, adapted for Suspense by Walter Brown Newman. Supporting Mr. Freeberg in Alibi Me were Kathy Lewis, Geraldine Wall, Vic Perrin, Jerome Thor, Jack Crucian, Eddie Marr, and Dick Beals. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Stop it, CW. I'm having flashbacks back to boot camp.
Oh, gosh.
I heard that. You're going, lift, lift.
Lift, KP duty, mister. Get on there, drop down, and give me 20. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Oh, God. There goes that bloody goat.
That's what the goat thinks of that.
Stress management.
Goat Gardner's ideal. Interesting tale.
Well, first and foremost, absolutely fantastic. Just goes to show, tip the server. Tip the server, people. Give them something.
There you go.
Yep.
Do not stiff your waiter or waitress or wait person.
Or delivery person, or delivery. If you can. Give them something. Give them that Starbucks card that you never use.
There you go. Next week, we're going back into Egypt, ancient Egypt, no less. We dig it, man. I'm talking about 2000 plus, High Adventure, and Crisis. And then next Saturday, one more tomb. with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, a story called The Pharaoh's Curse. That's next weekend on Erie House Radio. You can listen to Gar and watch him, too, no less, on the Twitches there right after our show.
Right.
Actually, he's probably been running for a half an hour.
Yep. As they say, already in progress.
Already in progress.
Already in progress.
So if you're still hanging out with us, we appreciate it. What else is coming up? More fun things. We're going to have some more sci-fi after Egypt.
Yeah, go from the past to the future. Yep. Why not?
Ray Bradbury, one of my favorite science fiction writers.
Yeah, we have all kinds of fun stuff. Yep.
One of my favorite stories Dave dug up for that, for the Ray Bradbury weekend.
Yeah, what was that?
Wow.
High.
Season of Disbelief or Hail and Farewell?
Hail and Farewell. That's one of my favorite stories. I can't wait for that one.
Cool.
It should be fun.
Mr. Bradbury. Cool guy.
Yep. So was Pete Puma.
Here we are. Tea's on.
But I don't want no tea. It gives me a headache.
Oh, what shall we have then?
Coffee.
Oh, we just lost CW. Hopefully she'll be back in time for us to say farewell. As we will join you next weekend, again, Friday at 6:30 Eastern, right here on Erie House Radio with me, Dave, and Gar the Ghoul on Friday, and me, Dave, and CW on Saturday, usually.
Yep, walking like Egyptians. Next week.
Yep. So once again, thanks for joining us for a birthday celebration of Stan Freeberg. You're back, Justin.
Yes,
Mr.
Freeberg, wherever you are, Mr. Freeberg, in the cosmos, remember, have a thick coating of that Marmaladio on whatever you're snacking on.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Oh, my gosh. Ooh. That was perfect.
Perfect.
That was like dead
perfect.
On. That splashy arch works with me. He's a really neat guy. And he's been listening for a long time. He finally got a ID. He told me this week at work he was going to sign in, and there he is.
Ah.
He missed us yesterday.
Oh,
he had his...
Yeah, that was the person who was in the chat?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes,
cool.
Flashy Arch. Yep.
Yep.
So, that was fun. Yeah, I like Stan Freeberg.
Yep, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, nothing. Just love him.
me too.
I
me
like
too.
His deep humor. I need...
Oh, oh God.
Well, kids.
It says here, Freeberg returned to radio in several episodes of the Twilight Zone radio dramas in the early 2000s.
I have all of those. I haven't listened to them all. I'll have to catch that.
Including the Brain Center at Whipple's, 4 o'clock, The Fugitive, Gentlemen, Be Seated, Kick the Can, The Masks, and Static.
Wow.
Static is very appropriate for him.
Static, one of my least favorite Twilight Zones of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you would like that one.
I don't know whether it's just too predictable or, you know, and I love Gleason in that, but I guess that one was just too predictable for me, you know?
I thought Static was the one where the guy was hearing old-time radio programs on his radio.
He was, and then ended up being back in the 40s. Yeah, so that...
Well, in his head,
I'm not saying it's a bad episode. I'm just saying it's one of my least favorite.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise. Let's just say a bad Twilight Zone is better than almost anything else out there. And I'm not saying it's bad. In my own opinion of ranking them, that would just be one of the bottom ones on my list.
Oh. I'm shocked.
So basically, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I mean, seriously. But, yeah, I mean, Twilight Zone is absolute grade A. If you want to be, I'm appealing to the meat eaters out there. It is prime, absolute choice. But sometimes, occasionally, you'll get a little bit of hamburger.
and I'm sure we all have some that said, well, you know, I don't really care if I see that episode again or not. We have some we could watch many, 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 many times over. And for me, it's just probably one of the few that I just say, okay, that was nice. I'm done with it. But it doesn't make it a bad episode. It's just in my own personal opinion, that's all.
Yeah, it's definitely not in your top 50.
I'm
just wondering if there's probably fans of it out there who are surgical fans, in the sense that there are fans who, now that it's on digital and everything, they look it over and look for any continuity errors, for example, saying, for example, hey, that vase was 3 millimeters to the left in that other scene. Now it's 2 millimeters. Okay, what's up with that? So, you know.
Yeah. That means they have no life. That's what it means.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of those continuity
things.
I mean, some things are pretty far off, but some things are so minute that if they hadn't mentioned it, it never would have been seen. You know, it's like people that take some Disney cartoons and do them frame by frame. By frame and find something in, you know, one or two of them. You know, come on. You know.
Well, you can, in the sense that it's fun to do it because they had to deal with the censors, not Disney, but Warner's and anybody who was doing tunes. Sometimes they would sneak a little something in there and it would skip by. For example, in the original Batman TV series, there was a word that was used that was in Arabic towards a character, and they were having one of their moments where they were fed up with the censors. So they used that word, and it skipped right over the censors. And basically, it means, well, it's not a bad word nowadays. It means son of a, et cetera, you know what I mean? That's what it translated out to.
Son of a female dog.
That's it!
There you go. There's a way to say it without saying it.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, so they definitely said it on network television in the 60s. Very few people understood it.
It's great.
Yep, yep.
But,
well, my friends, I think I'd like to sneak over and catch Gar at his first live show in about 3 months here.
Yep.
Indeed. And with that, with your kind permission, gentlemen, I will call the one, the only, the legendary, the Schnozola himself to take the stage.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Again.
Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible what we say, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
There he is. Love that goat. Don't hurt him.
Good night, folks.
Sounds like
good
a 50
night,
song.
Mrs. Calabash. Where
50 sitcom. Love that goat.
Love that goat. On the goat.
This is really bad. Really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, nowadays it's a college course. Love that goat.
Take five.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o.
Herbal radio.
Listen to radio.